Well, there was almost a Vandeveld situation this morning, Hazy, that was outrageous. By the way, remember the dude I told you about that said we were having, that didn't know we were having a match, but he actually knew?
Yeah, at 12, he was like, do you want to put some money on the line or on the back nine or whatever it was?
Dude, you have to come out next time I play against this guy. The antics that go on. Listen to this one. I've got a lightning detector in my like sight. I can't hit this punch shot with a lightning. It's a man-made structure in my view. You get relief from that to the side or whatever. It's like I didn't put that thing there. It's not a tree. It's a lightning structure. Doesn't want to give relief, blah, 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 and I hit the shot anyway. But I go six. I almost Vandevelded it, man. I'm six up and started puking on the back nine. Six up, six to go, and he wins 1, 2, 3, 4, and I'm like, man, this has got to stop.
Yeah, that's panic time, man. Like, dude, you had a dormy on the 13T.
That's
did
correct.
Did you get in your own head?
I just started choking a little bit, but I finished the deal off because he choked on 17 and I won the match. But he actually, it's agreed, handshake on the first tee. It's for $20. Drives off after the match. No cash.
Oh, see, that is it's so greasy, man. Guy's throwing the ninja dust up.
Character.
Oh, yeah. The old, let me just go, I got to park my cart over
then
here.
Then a
gone.
Text comes.
See you later.
I was in the can. You still here?
Yeah, I've received a couple of those, and listen, it can go both ways sometimes.
Not
the old,
from your
email
guy.
Transfer.
Not from your guy, is
was it? Tux?
No. Not from our guy. Although you talk about a rules confrontation, we were out one day a couple months ago, and our boy was in a tough spot. Like he was in a hazard, and it was a bad scene, and he wanted relief in the hazard, like take a one shot penalty, and everyone else wasn't aware that you could do that. Like the rest of the group, myself included, were like, I don't know if you can get relief from a hazard. So took a drop, took the penalty, lost the hole, and then we found out afterwards that you actually can't do that. And then it was a conversation with
everyone.
Well, who pulled
a slugger white on him and said you can't do it?
Well, I guess if you're playing, you know, I don't know the rules. That's the thing. Like when it comes to golf, I just ask people. Like that's the move. Like, hey, do I get relief here or not? Because I'm not just going to do it. I don't know what the rule book goes.
Oh, this dude up and calling, like this guy's slugger white. Like every time he's like, you can't go to the left of the path. You got to go to the right of the path. Sorry, there's not a good. But it's just like, come on, man.
I know. I know. It's like, it's tough. Because if you get a stickler, I was playing with a guy, not even a part of what I was doing. Was playing a match with a buddy of mine separately, but in the foursome, called me before I teed off on being beyond the tee blocks. So, I put my ball in the ground. He comes up and goes, you might want to pull that back before someone calls you on it. I didn't even know what he was talking about. I'm like, you have your ruler out? Like, you're checking whether or not I have the ball appropriately teed behind the tee blocks. He called me on it on 2T.
That's
not even in my match. I'm like, okay, I guess. Thank you for that. Like, how am I supposed to respond? Technically, I guess he's right, but we're not on the PGA Tour.
Dude, you got to give him this like line. That? You got to give him this. Get your language off my golf ball, or we're going to have a physical problem, not a verbal one.
Your language off my golf ball.
Yeah, get your language off my golf. Like, don't talk to my golf ball or me about it,
right.
Or we're going to have a physical problem, not a verbal one.
Has there been fist fights on the course?
Oh, like, dude, tons of them. I've never witnessed one personally, Noodles, but there's videos that go viral. And before everyone had a flip phone or a camera on their phone, those would have been happening all the time.
Dude, here's
forever.
What happens, Noodles.
Brawls.
Here's how the brawls go down, okay? It's late afternoon, and there's some gentlemen that are severely into the Coors Lights.
Sure,
okay?
They're buckled. Yep.
Let's drive the green when the guys are on it. Maybe we don't think we can reach it, but maybe we can. And then mayhem ensues.
That is a completely different brawl. Like, that is a safety reaction.
Or hitting into people or that type of.
That happens a lot.
A lot.
Yeah, that's like
they drive back and say, what are you thinking? You want to get after it? You want to do it?
Right.
I know I have buddies that are happily in, like, they want to get engaged in that type
well,
of stuff.
Usually it's like the second or third time, Noodles. Like, someone will hit into your group, you'll turn around and say, guys, what the hell are you doing? And then it happens again three holes later. It's like someone getting hit from behind in beer league. You know, you get hit from behind, there's a chance the guy's going to get up and drop the gloves. Like, he might. He might not. He may just slash you. He may just have a word with you. May not say anything. But there's a chance.
Well,
like, I've
I
seen
understand.
That before. I've seen a guy get buried from behind, and the gloves are off the second he gets up. And it's like, we got to fight here at Beer League. It's midnight.
I understand,
York
like
University.
You said, you lay it out, and I'm not naive enough to know that, you know, it's late afternoon, guys are deep into the booze, and it's somebody that you don't know. You drive the green, and you're being here. But I'm talking in a foursome. And it just, like, you know, your brother-in-law gets out of line, or, you know, like, cousins, or you name it. Like, I mean, I haven't heard of that. I've heard a lot. I've heard of nose-to-nose and chirping. And
see, that doesn't happen if it's, like, if there's a rule. Like, if you're having a club match with one of the guys at your golf club, I don't think there's fisticuffs that get involved in, like.
I bet you there are. Not with buddies. I don't think with
email
friends.
Us or text us if there is, but I think that would be a stretch. To have a drop-down drag him out if it's like, I don't get a drop here, I do?
I wouldn't be surprised, because if you're dealing with, you know, a club championship or something like that, and someone gets called on a penalty that they don't feel they should have, or they don't get proper relief, you know where it can come up from time to time? And I heard about this recently. Is, well, someone goes OB red stake and they want to drop the ball. They think they went in, you know, here, 75 yards out.
30. Oh, yeah.
And the other guy's like, no, you were 50 yards back, man. And then it's like nose to nose brawl time where you're like, who really cares? You're playing for a plaque on the wall.
Tell us the stories. Tweet us your golf brawls.
I need them.
Hashtag golf brawls.
I know, like, the only thing I could say is I witnessed, and I think I may have told this story on the show before. Travis Green invited me to his charity golf tournament, like Castlegar, BC. You know, like, not a lot of people are flying in there to go. So I fly in with Ray Whitney. And you know who shows up? Adam Deadmarsh brings Peter Forsberg, like one of the biggest hockey stars on the planet at the time. Arguably one of the best players, right?
Right.
I mean, this guy is literally, you know, that good. And I don't know the backstory, but, like, I don't think he's a golfer. But he happened to be, like, on a team that was really good, and they won. And, of course, there's a prize, some prize money at the end. But as they're about handing out the trophy and some money or whatever, some hero, like, challenges, like, the group that one of the guys moved a branch that was dead or a branch, like. And,
that's
and
what I'm saying, Noodles.
There was, like, a almost a fist fight.
Oh, yeah.
In at the banquet, and Forsberg's going, I don't want the money, I'll just give it back. Like, it was embarrassing. I think he was embarrassed.
That would be embarrassing, and that's kind of what we're talking about, Noodles. Like, people that don't play the game would think this is the most ridiculous conversation of all time, and I understand it. And listen, if you're playing a match, the rules are the rules, right? And if you're playing for money or if you're playing in a tournament or whatever, you got to play by the rules.
Right.
A lot of people are just genuinely ignorant to it. You know, I didn't know I couldn't move that, you know, or, you know, what's a big one is grounding your club in the bunker. A lot of players do it, don't think anything of it. You can get called on that. It's a two-stroke penalty.
That's right. And it's like a lot of people, even 10 handicaps and above, like just good, kind of good players, they set their club in the sand, and you seem like such a jerk if you're like, hey, man, because they'll deny it till death.
Right.
Like, you can look right there. You see the dirt going backwards. You can't ground your club in the bunker.
No.
And I don't think a lot of people care to even care about it.
No, it's crazy. If you're just playing a game, why would you? You know, but it is technically a rule you can call on someone. And it's one of those, you know, if it's on the 18th hole and we're all square, I might call you on it. I won't on the first hole. But even that is like selectively being greasy. Like, on the first hole, we're buddies. On 18, I'm going to have to call you on that. You know, like, I'm sorry, you can't take that drop. You can't. But when in doubt, ask people. And if you're just playing with buddies, it's never going to get out of hand.
No, but like, you know, that.
And it should never get out of hand. But
you hear stories of, like you say, like, oh, you just, that's what piqued my interest is really, like, don't talk to my ball. Don't talk, don't language my ball. Don't even look in my direction. Well, and dude, like, you're like, guys get guy chippy about their own game.
A golf match. Like, I can honestly say,
a tee box infraction, I've never heard of that being called anywhere.
Well, if it's obvious, there's some guys where it's like, hey, at least get it behind the blocks, please.
Sure, but like, it wasn't.
But for
it
some guy that's nothing to do with your match and the guy that you're playing with doesn't care, it's like, dude, just settle down and no more language on the golf ball.
Right. Like, that's a goofy one, really. That's why you see a lot of tee boxes. Some of them, they don't even have markers, right? When we were playing a course recently where that was the case. And anyway, it doesn't matter. It's completely irrelevant. It's a minor detail of the game, but it really doesn't give you that much of an advantage is the point. Okay, I'll move it back 6 inches, and all of a sudden it's quote-unquote legal. But those are the kind of things that can come up. But technically, they're the rules, and if you're a stickler for the rules, then that's what can come with the territory.
Dude, if I ever played with a guy that said you actually teed your golf ball up an inch ahead of the tee markers, I'd get in my cart and I'd go home. I'd shake his hand.
It was awkward. It was
on the second hole,
and it was awkward.
You won.
And I'm just, I'm like, I wasn't playing against the guy. That's the whole point. I'm like,
I know. But
and
if
I was,
my
I would
opponent
never think
said,
about that in a million years.
My opponent said there's a shot penalty or whatever because you were ahead of the tee markers. I would shake his hand and say, you won the match. I don't want to play against
right.
you.
Right. I can see. You win. You win. Whatever it is, 16
bragging,
and 15.
Bragging rights. That's really what it is. I mean, like, I don't. It's ridiculous how serious people take it. I understand. You know, even like you say, beer league hockey. Guy gets hit from behind. I got a buddy who broke his hand on a Tuesday night. The guy's an oil and gas executive. One of the makes $1 million a year. The guy's got to go to the hospital at 12:30 at night.
I remember
he got in a fight on a Tuesday.
I remember a buddy of mine, his dad got in a dust-up when we were out in his league. You know, we were in our teens or whatever, just out there skating and playing.
Yeah.
And it was like a dust-up. And like, I'm like, what is happening? This guy's giving me a ride home afterwards. What are we going to talk about in the car?
Like, there's nothing scarier when you're like an early teen and there's a dad fight. You're like, this is serious stuff.
This is really crazy and wild stuff. Like, it never got too carried away where like gloves were off, but it was like a gloves on kind of smacking match and chirping and kind of commentary on the bench, and I'm like, what the hell are we doing here? You know, I'm 12 years old out for a spin and I'm getting a ride home. I'm like, are we silent in the car? Are we going to mention that infraction, or how are we handling this commute?
That's awkward.
It's
very
awkward. Yeah, it was quite the scene. So, anyway, we've got a big one today. Al's brother will be in later this afternoon. He picked himself a winner last night. Credit to him. He went out on a limb and took the Dodgers over the Arizona Diamondbacks. I think that means the Dodgers are now 47.5 games up on the D-backs. So I think that race is over. I'm willing to concede that. But Al's brother's got himself a winner, so he's back in the fold. I will be on the clock tonight. Last time I checked, Washington football team laying 3.5 at home against the Giants. So I will be making a pick later this afternoon. I think they're going to unveil a new name at some point. I think they said they were down to 3 options. Yeah, I was reading about it last week. I think they came out with an update because they did a fan survey asking fans, you know, what name you'd want, which is what we did in Toronto with the Raptors. And I don't remember what the percentage was, like how it was weighted, in terms of like the fans' vote compared to the owners' vote and the NBA's vote or whatever it was going to be. Obviously, Jurassic Park had just come out, hence, you know, Raptors were incredibly popular.
Yeah,
and
I wondered how that ever came about because it's a very unique name.
It has nothing to do with Toronto either, right?
Right. Like yeah.
Raptors have nothing to do with the city of Toronto, but that's the name, and there's no looking back. Let me find it here. I had it earlier this afternoon. Okay, these are the options that they're going with. I think they're down to 3 at this point, but Red Hogs, Defenders, Armada, Presidents, Brigade, Commanders, Red Wolves, or stay with Washington football team. So
can you go through the top of the list again?
Presidents sounded, or Commanders.
Yeah, the Washington Red
Commandos.
Hogs. The Red Hogs. I kind of like Red
What's
Wolves.
What's a Red Hog?
I have no idea. I guess it's a... It's a pig. I don't know.
I think I just created a sound bite here, which I didn't mean to. I apologize, but I like.
We all know a red hog.
Yeah.
Come on.
That cannot be the name, please.
No. don't. Whatever. I think it's on a short list, Noodles, if I'm being honest with you. I think there's
they're not calling them people. The Red Hogs.
The Red Hogs.
The symbol alone will not be good. Like, there'll be memes. Like, you can't do that. I actually just, you know, I stuck my foot in it here. I apologize.
I like Washington Football Club. Why not just stay with that?
I've come around on it. I'll be honest. When I first saw it and heard it, I'm like, that's the goofiest thing. But it's actually so unique.
Yes.
Like, it's
got a soccer vibe, I will admit. But it's like, you know what? Once you kind of watched them play last year, saw them with the helmet or whatever, it's just like, okay, you're the Washington Football Club. Go with it. Don't go with Warthog or Red Hog or Presidents. Like, this, you're just searching for something stupid. Well,
but I thought, correct me if I'm wrong, that was a passive-aggressive shot at them changing their name. Like, okay, you want us to change our name? We're going to go with the most, you know, here's the generic. Because where I grew up, the superstore, the yellow brand, everything's yellow brand, right? Like, out west, there's a grocery store that if you want, it might be like President's Choice here. Everything's President's Choice or whatever. Like, yellow brand at the superstore. Like, that's the Washington yellow brand. Like, they were like, we're going to be, all right, well, we're the Washington football team. Mm-hmm. Just so we don't hurt anybody's feelings. I almost thought that
I think that was a part of it, too, almost. Like, although, remember, it happened so quickly where, like, companies, I think FedEx was one of them that leaned into them and said, we're not doing this anymore. Yeah. And the owner down there, Dan Snyder, is always in hot water because he's just one of the worst owners going.
Dude, ever.
Right.
Ever.
Ever.
He's always in a brutal spot. Like, there's never a positive headline about that guy, ever. It's always negative. So I think FedEx, who is the title sponsor of the stadium, was like, we're out here, and all of a sudden they're like, okay, fine. So I think they were in a bit of a bind where they had to do it quickly. But I think you're hitting the nail on the head. There was some petulance there as well. Like, okay, you want to get crazy here? How about this? Washington football team. Now I've kind of come around. I've kind of come around on that. But we'll see. Anyway, well, they're laying 3.5 tonight, so I will have the pick a little bit later on. Brendan Shanahan had a sit-down with Steve Simmons, and there's some interesting quotes that have come out of that. We will tell you about it. We'll get into it. Speaking of sit-downs, Linda Cohn of ESPN had a sit-down with Evander Kane.
Yeah.
And Evander, you talk about almost unanimously negative headlines. That would pretty much define him over the last 6 months, with his estranged wife making really serious accusations on Instagram over the summer that he's been gambling on hockey, that he's been throwing his own games.
Crazy, man.
And playing a role in that. And he came out today, and he vehemently denied it. We have the audio. Why don't we play it here? This is Evander Kane sitting down with Linda Cohn of ESPN. When she asked him, you know, bluntly, how do you respond to this accusation?
Have you ever bet on an NHL game?
Not at all.
Have you ever bet on any one of your own games?
Never.
Have you ever intentionally tried to lose a game?
No.
Have you ever altered the way you played because of a bet you or anyone else perhaps made?
Not at all.
So I think, Linda, that's a spectacular way of approaching it, because it's got to just be point blank, yes or no, yes or no, yes or no. Like, answer the questions. And obviously he doesn't need to go deeper into that. If he is vehemently stepping up and adamantly saying,
I
did not do it.
I always wonder about the PR there, Hayes. Like, he wanted that interview to say that
stuff, right?
Of
course. He has to. He's got to get out.
Yeah, but when it's so simple and she's like, did you gamble? He goes, no. It's like, does that really think that for him and his image and the PR element of it, does that really, like, make everybody at ease? I don't know. You'd have to talk to a PR person, but it's just like, why? You know you're going to say that, so.
Well,
if it comes out where he actually did do something like that, wow.
Well, I mean, you can talk. The thing is we won't know until there's other things that are going to come unfold. I watched the interview. She goes at him. Like, she, you know, we just took a little piece there, but he talks about his gambling. He talks about how he filed for bankruptcy. He talked about how he's in a tough position right now based on allegations, what he denies. So, you know, she's one of the best, and she didn't, like, it wasn't softball central. It wasn't, you know.
Nor should it be, considering this accusation, and this is someone who is, like, this is his wife. This isn't a random egg avatar on Twitter that doesn't deserve the light of day. This was a massive accusation. Evander Kane has been in a bad place at different times in his career, right? Like, he's dealt with different issues off the ice. There are also rumors out there that he was asked about, we'll play this clip later this afternoon, about some of his teammates not wanting him back or wanting him around. He responds to that. We'll get into it. But, of course, he's going to adamantly deny it. Bill Daly spoke today, the deputy commissioner, and said they expect a resolution on this before the beginning of the season. So, clearly, they have been reviewing the tape, speaking with people. I have to believe they spoke with Kane's estranged wife about what she's saying and what kind of evidence she might have. But it's really put a spotlight on him. It coincides with this relationship with the gambling world, which I'll bet you makes Bettman very uneasy because he's always been against it, and now he's for it because of the money that's included. And everyone in sports and sports media is playing the same game, right? Like, gambling's here in North America. It's the Wild West in many ways in terms of being able to lay down bets and find access to different ways of doing it legally now. And there's a lot of money that's going to be pouring in. But this is as, you know, bad of an accusation as you can get in terms of the integrity of your sport. The idea that someone is gambling on the games and someone is potentially throwing the games. So he has to answer for it. Yeah. He's going to have to answer for it when he shows up in San Jose. And quite frankly, if he speaks around the league, I think he's going to have to do this in 31 other markets.
Sure.
Right?
I mean, we're not privy to all of the information, but you're starting to ask. And I think the key is, does his teammates want that around? Like that,
he's got personal
problems. He's got a lot of things that he has to sort out just as a away from hockey. But when it comes out that, like, the teammates are like, you know what, we can't have this around. Like, that's even more harmful. This is his professional career. Like, he's got lots of term left, lots of money. Can't forget, the guy is the only guy that really had a good season for them last year.
He's still a really effective, productive player.
As a hockey player. He's a good player. He's got serious issues going on off the ice.
Yeah. And that's not just that rumors where his teammates. When those rumors are floating around, they don't want him back. Someone just didn't pull that out of their rear end. Who wants to deal with that? Nobody. Absolutely nobody.
It's tough, too, because when somebody goes either to the manager or to ownership and says, like, we just don't want this in our room, they've got a situation on their hands because he's got a long-term deal. I would argue that deal's probably not tradable right now until he cleans up or, deals with what's going on right now in his personal life. So there's a lot of moving parts out there in San Jose. Like, you lost in all of this, they're paying, three defensemen, $40 million? Like, you got, that's
yeah.
The
thing is, though, if I'm the
side.
League, isn't it a red flag if his teammates are saying they don't want him around, potentially? Like, if the rumor is substantiated, is that something worthy of trying to unravel? Like, what do they know?
Right.
Like, because if he didn't gamble on the games, and it's not true at all, why would the team not want him around? Like, unless they don't like him for other purposes. But the idea that this is too big of a distraction that we can't handle. There's always distractions in sports, man. Every team has to deal with different things from time to time. I find it hard to believe an Instagram post, if it's not true in the off season, leads to the whole room saying we can't deal with that. Like, I would have to believe there's more to it if it's true that the players don't want him around.
I thought they know
something we don't know that I think the league should probably be looking into.
They've got a pretty good scribe out there, Kevin Kurtz, who follows the team, is pretty close. And I thought I read it, his article where he was saying, part of the stuff was that it was almost like they felt there were two rules. He would late for team meetings, I think there was a level of maybe unprofessionalism that came from him, but they were like, he's such a good player, we got to play him type of thing. And I thought, even Bobby Bugner had to weigh in on it. Like, there's a lot going on. That's a big situation. This isn't just somebody who had a tough season on the ice. Like, this is real life problems that they
One of the things that got my attention was when you're involved in the gambling like stuff like that, not everybody is roses, right? Like, I don't think that if they're tracking where these bets are coming from, these people don't want phone calls from the National Hockey League or whatever.
He admits that it was a bookie, not like he says during the interview, at least that's what I read. And Linda Cohn will join us later this afternoon at 6:25. is, you know, he had lost money via the casino, like the Cosmopolitan was the one that I believe brought him to court.
Yeah.
So it's not a guy in a suit in Atlantic City in his basement.
He did, I believe, and
come on,
listen,
Hayes.
I would imagine there is a guy with a tracksuit.
That's right.
You think
with that kind of money he's tossing around that he's not dealing with some people doing that crap? Come on.
Well, that's what I'm saying, and I believe he said that. He was, and that's what his wife was alleging, that it was with bookies. And that when it gets into bookies, you're talking a very different shady part of the gambling world, right? Like the casinos are legitimate business. Doesn't mean you have to like it or not. It's legitimate business.
Correct.
Right? Betting online and all that kind of stuff, this new legislation, it is legit. You have the right to do that. Don't have the right to bet on hockey. That's against the rules, as you guys know. Everyone that plays the game knows it. But bookies, that is where you start bringing in a different potential clientele. You know,
well, if you're into them for money, then they're maybe squeezing you for information.
They're not taking
you
to court.
Right,
you know,
right.
What's important out of that, Noodles, they're not taking you to court.
Right.
Like,
and I know,
that's where it gets
I need to clarify, man.
It can get dicey.
I need to clarify one thing just that you said recently, Hayes. That's why I smiled. You're like, casinos, they're a legal thing. Everyone loves them. I was like, yeah, yep. Speaking from the guy who has a little bit of experience in that. That's why I was chuckling.
I'm just, that's right. I mean,
advocating
for casinos. It's all in the up and up. Very ethical. Very ethical. Good people.
Yeah, exactly.
Bookies can be a bit of a different story.
Yeah.
So Linda Cohn of ESPN will join us in a couple of hours. We're going to have a Maple Leaf draft. We'll tell you about that later this afternoon. Pascal Siakam speaking to the New York Times. Some interesting quotes coming out of that. We'll get into that later this afternoon. And the Ryder Cup, less than a week away from starting, Peter Kostas will join us, get his take on the build-up towards that. And the new PGA Tour season has officially begun. It's underway. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. Saw a stat earlier today with the Yankees winning last night. That's 82 wins on the season. That obviously constitutes a winning season for them. That is 29 seasons in a row where they have had a winning record. 29. Dating back to 1993, from 93 through 2021, 29 years in a row.
That is impressive.
Record.
But money
what's
buys
also
that, too.
Also impressive is seeing some teams, like recently, you look and it's like Giants clinched a playoff spot. It's like, holy crap. Like, clinching a playoff spot, dude, right now is... That's legit, man.
That's legit. I mean, there's still a lot of games left, and there's some really good teams, and you know you're getting there. Like, Tampa knows they're getting there, but they're going to have to wait a week or whatever to clinch.
Right.
And the Giants were the first team in Major League Baseball to clinch. But, yeah, I was looking at the list here. The most consecutive winning seasons across the four major sports in North America. Number one is the Yankees from 1926 to 1964. Which is crazy because Ruth was there before 1926. So when he was on that team with Lou Gehrig, I believe they must have had losing seasons. The Habs from 51-52 through 82-83. That's a pretty good run. 32 seasons in a row.
That is amazing.
Then the current Yankees team and then the Bruins from 68 through 96 also had 29 straight seasons with a winning record. So pretty impressive. Right? Pretty impressive. And now you got a three-way tie for this wild card spot. Jays, Sox, Yankees, 16 games to go. It's going to be a fun ride. It's going to be a fun 2.5 weeks for sure. So we'll get back into that a little bit later this afternoon. The PGA Tour is, you know, back up and running. We're into the new season. But really, it's more about the Ryder Cup at this point. And we cannot wait for it next week at Whistling Straits. And we are joined now by former golf commentator. He's been on before. We're always happy to have him back. Here is Peter Kostas. How you doing, Peter?
I'm doing well, guys. You know, you got a Sox guy here, and I'm assuming you guys are Toronto guys, so we can all agree that we don't like the Yankees, right?
Perfect. I'd sign off right now. Jay's Sox. Perfect. Jay's Sox in Toronto, though. At the Dome. We don't need Fenway. We don't want to see that in a wild card game, one game wild card. Not interested in that, but yes, we're all in agreement on that front, Peter. Although you got to give it to him, we just mentioned that stat: 29 seasons in a row, the Yankees have had a winning record. Are you willing to give them that, or do you hate them too much?
No, I don't. I won't give them a thing. No.
Okay.
The Red Sox have more championships this century than the Yankees. That's all I know.
That's true. So. Yeah, that counts. The whole 20th century thing, a bit of a different story, but that's neither here nor there.
That's true, but you know, I live in the present.
I like that. I like that. Well, in the present, we're dealing with the Ryder Cup in less than a week, and it feels as if the angst on the American side has been focused on two guys now. It's DeChambeau and Koepka, and if this goes south, it's their fault. Are you picking up on the same narrative, and do you think there could be truth to that?
Well, I mean, listen, the U.S. side, I think, generally speaking, I went to my first Ryder Cup in 1983. I broadcast my first Ryder Cup in 1989. I did all of them from 89 to 2004 with the USA Network, and have been to pretty much every one since, last one being in Paris. And I can say that since about 87, I think the European side, generally speaking, has played as a team better than the U.S. side has played as a team. Now, there were times in there where the U.S. talent was significantly greater than the European side, and therefore they won. But I think the whole thing's going to come down to, how well can Steve Stricker get his 12 guys to play together? Because that's part and parcel of what the Ryder Cup is.
It's they have to play together, Peter, but don't you agree that individually they got to go out there and play good golf? I mean, you got to have some chemistry, but they just can't seem to play good golf. They can't seem to find that right mix, and you've got all the personalities and Koepka's comments coming out beforehand saying he doesn't like it when his partner gives him a crappy lie, blah, blah, blah. It's just some of the stuff that comes out right before the Ryder Cup. It just seems like it just sums up this American team all the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, make no mistake about it. Every single team sport in the world comes down to individual performances. I don't care whether it's baseball or football or the Ryder Cup. If the individuals, if your quarterback doesn't play well, if your pitcher doesn't throw well, the team is going to be at a disadvantage, right? So you got to get the individuals playing. Now, on the European side, you've got guys like Sergio and Poulter, who, regardless of their form coming in, they managed to find a level of passion and excitement about the Ryder Cup, and they managed to find their game. And the U.S. needs a little bit of that, right? And they most certainly need to make some critical putts at critical times, because that's what I've seen has been the difference in the last few Ryder Cups, is that the Europeans have won more critical holes, the 18th hole, 17th hole. They've made the putts when the putts were needed.
So you're fine with, all of this circus leading up to it, as long as they, I guess, work as a team when they're playing. I mean, that's the one thing. The other side just seems to be wants to play, wants to be fine, but I just see a lot of bickering, a lot of egos, and that's fine in pro sports, but they need to deliver, and they need to deliver at the right time. And you're fine with all this leading up to it?
I'm not fine with it. I think it's a liability. I mean, this Koepka and DeChambeau thing has been going on for quite some time, and I don't know how serious it is. I'm not out there anymore, but it can't help the situation. I mean, they've got to sit together in the team room, right? And so somehow they got to put this behind them and figure out a way to play for the greater good. If they can do that, there's plenty of talent on the U.S. side to win. If they can't do it, I think there's plenty of talent on the European side to win.
Peter, it's such an individual sport, and they're so into what they're doing. Bryson, you just mentioned him, is such an interesting, fascinating guy to kind of watch and follow on TV. If you're Stricker, I mean, I don't think he's a fan favorite amongst his peers out there. How do you find a guy to kind of mesh with him in whatever format they're playing? Because he's doing weird stuff. He's driving all over the map. He hits it really long, obviously. But to find a pairing for that would be a bit of a chore, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, I think, again, I don't know what form they're in right now, and he's been doing a lot of training for the long drive championship, which is the week after and all that stuff. That's just really goofy. But I don't think you put him out in four balls. I think you put him out in foursomes. You put him out in four ball, better ball, best ball, whatever we call it these days. And you put him with somebody like a DJ, who DJ could care less what's going on. Yeah. He's going to go out and play DJ golf, and I think he could handle playing with Bryson. You certainly can't put Brooks and Bryson together. That would be a disaster. That would be akin to Mickelson and Tiger playing in 2004 in Detroit. That was, I don't know what Hal Sutton was thinking, but it clearly wasn't going to work out. So, and then Bryson, when you get to the individual side, I think he's going to be fine on Sunday, but you got to find somebody who's willing to put up with his antics and accept him for what he is for two matches, one on Friday, one on Saturday, in the best ball category.
Well, we're chatting with Peter Costas, longtime golf commentator. What is the conversation that goes back and forth when they go out in four ball and you've got, you know, two teammates who are maybe during alternate shot? Let's say he's paired. Let's say Bryson's paired with DJ, and it's DJ's turn to take the shot. Is Bryson involved?
No.
In any capacity, or is he just staying on the other side of the fairway? Like, what are the interactions with all of this?
I don't know what the Vegas odds are, but if you told me that Stricker was going to put DeChambeau out in alternate shot, I would take the under all day long. Okay. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Why do you
really
say that?
Don't.
Because he would say, hey, I need you to hit it here, or I need, like, he would get involved, or he would be a distraction. What? Why would that be such an issue?
I don't think that there's anybody on the team that is compatible with his style of play, and I don't know that he's willing to modify his style of play, you know, for 18 or 36 holes. So I think that that's just a can of worms that you don't want to open. So I would put him out best ball, let him go play his game, put him with DJ, let him go play his game, and hopefully they make a whole bunch of birdies and win their match. And that's it. So I see DeChambeau playing three matches in my mind, no more.
Peter, I saw Scottie Scheffler on the Golf Channel today, and he was talking about Stricker and the job he was doing kind of getting the guys together, and they've all kind of said that this stuff kind of bothers them and it's a chore to show up at meetings. I mean, do you think that that's just something they have to do? Do they really actually kind of bond together? I know it's Europe. It seems like they have booze and they get together every night and they actually do gel. But do you think it does work for the American, or is the best strategy, I don't care if you guys don't like each other, just go out there and play good golf?
I think what Stricker's got to do is create an environment that allows each player to do his thing to the best of their ability so that he puts them in a position to succeed. You know, it's a whole different breed of dog when you go to the Ryder Cup. Everybody's used to being on their own. They can show up when they want. They can leave when they want. All they got to do is make their tee time on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, right? And they don't have to answer to anybody. Now you got to show up at team meetings. You've got to go to dinners. You've got to do stuff. You're there for an extra day before you start playing. When you get there on Tuesday or Monday night, whenever they get there, Friday seems like an eternity. And by then, you're really itching to play. So I think that trying to get them to bond too much would be a mistake. Let them be their individual personalities and let them play their individual games, and collectively, you might end up with a good score.
Peter, before we get you out of here, I got to ask about a personal ruling of myself on the golf course today. I had a drop from the cart path onto the grass, and it was a par 5, and I had to hit a 3-iron punch shot layup, but right in front of me was this lightning structure thing, not like nothing normal. It was man-made and put there, and it was right in my line of sight where I'm going to hit the shot. Do I get relief from that object in front of me?
You would in a tour event. It would be considered a immovable obstruction,
right?
I'm not in a tour event.
Yeah. But what about $20 at a local muni in Toronto? What about that?
Boy, that's even more reason to get a drop,
right?
You know.
So right, the point is it's man made, so I get a drop. If I can't, I don't want to smash into this like. It's in my way. It's man-made. I gotta get relief from that.
You would get line of sight relief.
There you go.
Thank
you
very much, Peter. Thank you very much.
Next time we have an issue on our own course and with our own games, we'll just call you, Peter. And I'm sure you don't have better things to do than deal with us.
No, and I'll send you my address where you can send the check.
Yes, we'll happily pay that.
You got it, buddy.
Thank you, Peter. Appreciate it.
You got it.
There's Peter Kostas, longtime golf analyst. An important ruling in retrospect.
Yeah, it is. I don't know where you guys stand, but I would love to see, and I don't think it's, you know, Stricker would do it, but why wouldn't you put, you know, DeChambeau together?
With Koepka, I'd love it. I would absolutely
but that's
love
the thing.
It.
You saw Tiger and Phil in Detroit.
Never happen.
It was a mess.
Yeah.
But like, he might say, to hell with both of you. You're a pain in my ass. You're golfing together. Like, wouldn't that be the best?
It would be the best with alternate shot noodles because
they'd be yelling at each other.
I don't think DeChambeau could help himself. I really think he would go up to his partner and say, I need you because of the wind coming in.
Blow a fart.
I need you to do something for me here. And then I need you to put it within this range. Like, I think that would happen. And I think he'd blow a gasket if it didn't take place and Koepka would give him the bird. It'd be the best thing possible for entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, there'd be nothing better than the two of them alternate shot. That'd be the greatest thing going in golf.
But
Koepka and DeChambeau.
You floated that theory with the eye roll that, like, both of them know what they're doing. It's about, you know, hits on the internet, all of that type of stuff. Like, these guys might have a quiet friendship behind the scenes or maybe a respect.
I don't get the impression, but you never know. It would be if the fix was in where this was all about building up towards some big pay-per-view event, it would be absolutely brilliant promotion.
Can you imagine these two wheel up to the first tee with their stepbrother cardigans on and they're just like loving it and hugging each other and they're like, let's go, Brady style. I love it. I need to see something like that.
Well, speaking of Tom Brady, he was talking with Gronk, his boy Gronk. They were doing some video for the Bucks website or whatever. And he was asked about how long he can play and he gave another answer on it. So we'll let you hear it. We'll get into it. Linda Cohn still to come. Our boy Josh Lewenberg still to come on this Pascal Siakam New York Times piece. And what Masai said last week to CBC about how he perceives the team going into a new season. That more still to come. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Brendan Shanahan speaking with Steve Simmons, and that just went up online. We'll tell you what he had to say about Mitch Marner, about the pressure of the upcoming season, about looking back on last year. Get into that into the next hour, and Pascal Siakam speaking with the New York Times. Everyone's coming out and talking. Everyone's got something to say. The papers are alive. The Sun, the Times. we've got quotes. No audio, no video. We got quotes. So we'll get to that into the 5 p.m. hour. We do have some audio and video, though, of Tom Brady sitting down with Gronk and Gronk asking him about how long he thinks he's going to play, which I think is a question that's appropriate for Gronkowski as well.
Sure. Right?
Like, he retired, left for a year. He's into his 30s. He's a beaten-up guy. He's got all the money, got all the rings. But Gronk posing the question, Brady's 44 years old. This was his response.
Can Tom Brady play until 50 years old?
Wow. Seems to be a really hot question lately. Can Tom Brady play till 50? Like, 50 years old?
Yeah, 50.
50.
You're 44, that's six more years.
I don't find it so difficult. And plus, in the Florida, it's kind of a retiree state, so I feel like I can play and then just glide into retirement. I think I can. I think it's a yes.
So, do you think he's goofing around at this point, or is there anything legitimate about this?
I do not think he's goofing around. I think there was a voicemail back in the day. I mean, he was talking about Peyton Manning or something, or the goats of quarterbacks. And he was like, I'm going to play till I'm 47, I think he said back then. Do you remember that, Hayes?
That does ring a bell.
He was on record. It was kind of like Phil's voice message where he said he wanted to take Charlie Hoffman's cash. But it was Brady who said, I think I'm going to play until I'm 47 or close to 50. And I believe him, man. There's nothing wrong. He doesn't look. He's...
Look at the week he had last week.
Yes.
You know, this is a complete anecdote that has no meaning whatsoever. But to put it into perspective where I'm at, I'm in fantasy. I have him in one of my pools. I have Matt Stafford in the same pool. I picked Stafford with the intention of playing him. I played Brady last week. I'm going to play Brady again this week. Like, I expect him to throw up three or four touchdowns against Atlanta. He's 44 years old.
Hey, there's one other thing that's driving me crazy, and I find it ludicrous that there's people, professionals, going on ESPN saying, as of right now, Dak Prescott is the leading candidate for the MVP. I'm like, what? Am I? What?
Well,
what am I missing
here? One game and he lost the game.
No
so
kidding.
I'm not
and
sure
people
how that
are
could
saying
be
he will be the MVP this season. I'm like, oh my.
I think he's going to be in the running.
And you wonder why the Cowboys' height drives me crazy.
All right, we'll come back and respond to that. We'll respond to Tom Brady and his projection as
yes,
well.
Yes, I want to respond to
you
that.
You have a response in store. Okay, hour two coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.